to do other things in their lives. So to say that marijuana is a harmless thing, I think is wrong, but to...
You are listening to WGXC ICRA, hands-on creative community radio at 90.7 FM and streaming live online at WGXC.org. WGXC is a program division of Wave Farm.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Peter McPartland of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Tune in to the daily Hudson Valley Coronavirus Report from the River Newsroom from Lissa Harris of The River and Roger Hannigan-Gilson of the Other Hudson Valley website. You can go to therivernewsroom.com and the otherhudsonvalley.com websites for more.
I don't know why they don't delay their shift.
Okay,
because
it's warm and
cold.
Yeah, it's warm.
The sky is the solid state of time. The sun.
Welcome to Movies on the Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, ICRA, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. Movies on the Radio is a monthly showcase of the sounds of experimental cinema and experiments in sound from artists, filmmakers, and makers of all types in Columbia and Greene counties and across the world. We are experimenting with the show's format today and taking a break from the Sidewalk Cinema, our outdoor screening space at 100 Main Street in Philmont, New York. It's a cold, gray, dreary January day today, and standing on a street corner to watch movies didn't seem like a lot of fun. And if you're like me, maybe recent events have given you your fill of spectacle. Today is also the birthday of visionary experimental filmmaker and patron saint of the Philmont Media Project, Stan Brakhage. Stan died in 2003, and he left behind a film catalog of over 350 works. In addition to that, he was a film critic, teacher, and poet. Here at the Philmont Media Project, we are hard at work curating a program of Stan Brakhage's 16mm film works to bring to Philmont in the coming months, so keep an eye out for that. But today we are going to be taking a dive into the archive of Stan Brakhage's radio show, The Test of Time, which he produced while he was teaching filmmaking at the University of Boulder in Colorado in the early 1980s. If you're not familiar with Brakhage's work, these recordings are a really great introduction to the breadth and scope of his creative curiosity, which ranged from, of course, the cinema, to ancient music, avant-garde poetry, and even stuff like birdsong. There's a lot I want to try to squeeze in here, so we'll just say happy birthday, Stan, and listeners, enjoy these selections from his radio series, The Test of Time.
In
Hi, I'm Stan Brakhage, and I'd like to present you with a riddle. I'm going to play a piece of music, and if you are at all like myself when I first heard this, or any of the people I've played it for, this music will probably haunt you, and you may have difficulty naming it. And so, in the middle of playing the first piece, I segued over to the orchestral version, at which point a lot of people at least probably recognized Stravinsky's Le Sacre du Printemps, or The Rite of Spring. The part that I was playing first is a version for two pianos, which was used, of course, in the original composition of the piece and used to help the dancers to learn how to dance to it, and played in this case on a London recording by the famous pair Eden and Tamir, who have made it their job to go around showing us what can be done with two pianos. One reason I did that was that this piece, which is generally associated with creation, is almost impossible to recognize in its original piano version. But by many people, at least, who are familiar with it, at least those who've seen Fantasia, the dinosaur sequence, might call it to mind when they hear the whole texture. Well, I have a sense that creation is hard to recognize in a more daily sense. All the time, people, when they think of creation these days, think of scientific explanations and so forth, or maybe ancient myths, which are often no longer believed. But around us, just in the daily chores and happenings of our life, and especially as it occurs in the mind of children, are creation myths springing anew. And one of the most amusing I know is James Broughton's Papa Had a Bird.
Papa had a bird. In the beginning was the bird, and the bird was with Big Papa. And they lived alone at the top of the sky, where Big Papa spent all his time making stars and pitching them out the window. "Listen, Dad," said the bird one day, "you ought to get out more often. This astronomy project is mighty important, but don't you ever get bored or lonesome?" "Listen, bird," said Big Papa, "I'm a poet, and I'm working for posterity. After a hard day creating, I'm perfectly content to curl up with a new space fiction." Well, the bird was bored. He wanted a holiday. So he packed a lunch from the larder, a piece of Sunday roast, a jug of moonshine, and quite a bit of divinity fudge, and he sneaked out the back door. There was no direction to go but down, so down he flew, until he came to the old Lake of Chaos, where he saw, lying on the warm banks, a serious virgin mermaid named Mary Baker Pangloss. Bird hailed her gracefully, and she sat up amazed. She had great respect for anything over her head, and she'd never seen such a bird before. In fact, Mary had never seen much of anything. She told the bird how hungry she was for a fuller life. "Have you an appetite for higher things?" said Bird, and he offered her his picnic lunch. Mary was thrilled to have something heavenly to sink her teeth into. Oh, it was divine, but very filling. It gave her a tummy ache. Indeed, she didn't feel well for months after because she began to swell. She swelled up until she thought she would burst, and then suddenly she did. And out came an egg, the lumpy, pockmarked egg of the world. "Isn't it pretty?" said Mary Baker Pangloss. "It's surely the best of all possible eggs, and what's more, it's mine." When Big Papa heard about the whole affair, he was absolutely furious. He said, "That little bastard is going to cause me a lot of trouble."
James Broughton's Papa Had a Pig. James Broughton is one of my oldest friends, one of the most delightful people on earth. He's a poet who's managed to be the most avant-garde in our time by choosing to write in various styles that are major roots of our sense of rhyming and limerick and language in general, but which have tended to be overlooked or despised. And that's not to bother James, who's anyway run in the teeth of the times in every way he could. He's a person who's originally was a tap dancer in show business and writing poetry then too. found his home in San Francisco, created a press there, which published some of the most extraordinary avant-garde works after the war, and went right on mining his own childhood experiences of poetics in relationship to modern times. That is, with a language absolutely American and not at all Mother Goosey in the original sense. A man also who insists on touching everything, every person, disconcerting to Americans who are usually uptight when Broughton comes up and feels their biceps, their shoulders, their stomach, their legs, their thighs, the tops of their heads, and embraces them such as few are embraced even by their mates. And James is a complete delight, and also is a constant example, at least, of creation to me. Wit is perhaps one of the greatest ways to make the daily recreation alive in people's minds. Another great wit, a great poet, and an old friend of mine, Ed Dorn, in his very latest book, Captain Jack's Chaps, by the Black Mesa Press, writes this poem, God Creates Man. There's no problem with God created man. Of course he did. He just created a lot of monkeys first for practice. But anyway, that's all rather vague. To be exact, Odin created man, as well as poetry. And he wore a hat and carried a staff, and he was a traveler like Mercury. Almost all of any poet's work, any single poem, could be said to be about creation. But one of the most interesting drives in our times to me is to mine earlier myths, to find how other people just looked at the world freshly. I'm going to play Ed Dorn reading years ago, more than a decade, in Riverside, California, his then work in progress from Recollections, La Gran Apacheria. The creation myth of the Apache recreated as Edward did in Creation.
There was a time when nothing existed. This time was before form. Time rolled on, and space, which derives its character from time, was not distinguished. There now appears a spot, a thin circular disk, no larger than the hand, yellow on one side, white on the other, in mid-air. The first distinction is naturally given. It is to be as pure conception, not genetically argued. Included in the disc, there is a bearded man the size of a hand. He is the sky man, the agency of the metaphor, the one who lives above. He wakes as if from a long sleep. He rubs his face and eyes with both hands, and where his eyes light, light appears everywhere, above and below a sea of light. A glance to the east, light associated with black, the south blue, the west saffron, the north the full spectrum. The one then cast out a ball, rolled from the sweat of the brow, and upsprung the parentless girl. Woman created first, out of a direct act of labor, not from some spare part. Night girl is the nucleus of the universe. Some other one then asked, where is the earth? And the one replied to this voice of the story, I am thinking, 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 thinking. I am thinking Earth.
And then he thought a little boy, and poco a poco, the whole phylum was brought into being. There was great laughter in the beginning when all creatures could talk.
I, my goodness, even called old friend Ed Dorn Edward to get some distance from him so that I could hear him as he gets at the Apache legends of creation, and then conjoined with the Indian music of Panalel Ghosh. I've been embarrassed since I first played a section of Panalel Ghosh, knowing that you have to hear the whole of it to get a sense of creation. Creation begins with at least almost nothing, and then has to develop carefully every piece of itself to make a world. And so, as usual, we end the program with A New River of Charles Ives. Hi, I'm Stan Brackage, and I would like for you to just listen to this beautiful, beautiful piece of very ancient Chinese music called Birds Returning to the Forest, in which you can hear not only a multitude of bird sounds being imitated, but also fights between the birds as they invade each other's nests and so on, as imagined by Chinese composer Anonymous. Thank you.
That was played by Louis Man Singh on an instrument called the erhu, which is really essentially two steel strings. And well might composers, ancient or modern, be involved in birdsong, because I hope to convince you before this program is over that almost all instrumental music really springs directly from that. Let's just listen for a moment to a recording of a variety of birds singing in the woods, a little record that's included in a book called Birdsong, Acoustics and Physiology by Greenwalt. And you'll hear a variety of them right now, including many warblers I'd like you to take some notice of.
Brown thrasher. Robin. Wood thrush. Eastern bluebird. Golden-crowned kinglet. Loggerhead shrike. White-eyed vireo. Prothonotary warbler. Blue-winged warbler. Parula warbler. Black pole warbler. Palm warbler. Connecticut warbler.
It goes on, and it isn't only composers, of course, that are interested in birds, but everybody. Poets, for example, some sense of just making a song, of giving forth of themselves into rhythmic word shaping in song, and also specifically imitating the birds in many of those songs. I want to not just deal with the poet, though, as I reintroduce James Broughton to you, because I realize that I've been so involved with that, I haven't had a chance to even let people know that he's a filmmaker, and one whose works are often shown at the University of Colorado on the Monday evening programs. He's one of the greatest living American filmmakers. And I think it's the particularity of his ability to not only think in terms of sound, but image, to think in terms of image when he's making sound in his poems, and of the sound or the texture of the noise of a thing when he's making films. His films, for instance, are extraordinarily involved in texture. But here, anyway, is his poem, The Birds of America, which will speak very well for itself in this context.
The Birds of America. Said the Birds of America, quack, 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 hoo, hoo, quack, quack, go, 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 phoebe, chip, chip, ka, 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 coo, chewy, cuckoo. And what is the meaning of that? Said the solemn bird cage maker. Oh, nothing at all, said the old turkey. We just enjoy the noise. Well, why not do something that makes some sense, said the serious birdcage man. We do all there is to do, said the eagle, the lark, and the others. We eat and sleep and move about and watch what's going on. We mate and nest and sit and hatch and watch the young get on. We hunt and preen and sing and wash. We take long journeys and local jaunts, or simply sit about and scratch and watch what's going on. But that's quite pointless, said the birdcage man. You'll never get anywhere that way. Maybe, said the magpie. However, when this continent began, we birds were the only two-legged creatures, and we're still very much around. What's more, the woodpecker added, everything man knows he learned from us birds, but he's never enjoyed it as much. The cage maker scoffed. What could you teach me? To do all there is to do, said the heron, the crow, and the others. To eat and sleep and move about and watch what's going on. To mate and nest and sit and hatch and watch the young get on. To hunt and preen and sing and wash. To take long journeys and local jaunts. Or simply sit about and scratch and watch what's going on. Oh, that's absurd, said the birdcage maker. Don't you know the real meaning of life? Of course we do, said the birds of America. Quack, 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 quack. Hoo, hoo. Rawr, rawr. Gook, gook, gook. Bee, bee, cheep, cheep. Ka, ka, ka. Coo-ah, chewy, cuckoo.
I always feel, when confronted with James Broughton, a little bit like a bird cage maker, only not so sour a one as he imagines. But I do hanker after meaning, after understanding. I mean, I'm fascinated that these birds around us are now considered by a whole branch of the science, the study of such, to be the leftovers of the dinosaurs. And not that dinosaurs were those great lizard things that I was raised to believe they were. And I pursue that. I study them and I watch them. And that's a visual occupation of mine out of which I make films that I can't share with you. But another aspect of it is that I've used in my films is slowed down bird sound, and I clearly hear the birth of at least all the horns of the orchestra. So from that same book I described to you earlier, I want you to listen to first some birds played regular speed and then 1/8 speed.
Another way of making the rapidly modulated phrases more nearly perceptible to human ears is to reproduce bird songs at speeds far below normal. The songs which follow are played first at normal speed, then at 1/8 normal speed. For the slow speed songs, there is, of course, an associated drop in pitch, amounting to 3 octaves. This transformation from high soprano to basso profundo is startling, but the modulations, at least, are in many cases recognizable. The Black Pole Warbler. The Grasshopper Sparrow. The Slate-Colored Junco. The Song Sparrow. Lapland Longspur.
Now, there is a composer named Olivier Messiaen who had the ability to sit and listen to these sounds of birds and to slow them down in his mind and even speed them up to hear the full extent of what his art, symphonic music and organ music, came out of. And he devoted a considerable part of his life to making a series of piano pieces called The Catalogue of the Birds. They're played in the recording that I've brought by Yvonne Loriot, who's his lifelong companion and a great pianist. He himself, for years, was the organist of a church in Paris, and then also did teaching. I remember a friend of mine studied with him there at one point, and sometimes he would miss class. One day, after missing several classes, he showed up and started to talk about music to the students and wandered over to the window and opened it up and stood there and said, "Oh, les oiseaux, oh, les oiseaux," and just overcome, turned and left the room. What I'd like you to do is imagining this man so involved with birds, sitting in a marsh, listening particularly to La Roussarole effarvette, which is a marsh warbler. And I'm playing from the district where he lived, a piece of recorded in France of this bird and a couple of other birds. Just listen for a minute. And so you have to imagine him listening particularly in this marsh to the reed warbler, as we would call it, among the sedge warbler and the bittern, which are the other birds heard there. And the reed warbler is the one with the kind of high tweeting pitch. And out of that comes one of the greatest pieces of modern music that I know, La Roussarole effarvette.
Thank you.
Thanks for spending the hour with Movies on the Radio and Stan Brackage. We're going to go out with Lee Rinaldo's improvisational musical response to the Brackage film, Text of Light. Movies on the Radio airs the second Thursday evening of each month at 7 p.m. We'll be back on February 11th with Catskill-based filmmaker and radio producer Richard Sandler to screen and listen in on his film and video work. Meantime, check us out online at filmontmediaproject.org. That's Filmont with an F. Or find the Filmont Media Project on Facebook or Instagram to stay updated with our projects, programs, and workshops.